Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. Some want it all. SFO wants zero. Zero landfill waste, net carbon, and net energy by 2030. Learn more about the triple zero goal at flysfo.com. Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
Good morning. This is the California Report. I'm Adi Bolaños in San Francisco. A historic agreement has been reached between seven western states to cut the amount of water they take from the Colorado River. But what are California's responsibilities under the deal? And which part of the state will be most affected? In Los Angeles, my California Report colleague Saul Gonzalez has the answers. Saul?
Hey, Madi. Under the deal, California, the state that uses the most water from the Colorado River, will be responsible for a big share of reductions, up to 1.6 million acre-feet of water. What's an acre-foot? It's about 326,000 gallons, or the amount of water that three average-sized homes need over the course of a year. And there's a carrot if California reduces its reliance on the Colorado River, part of more than $1 billion in federal funds that will go to irrigation districts, cities, and tribes that cut their draw from the river. The Imperial Valley, in the southeastern corner of the state, will be one of the places most affected by the agreement. Annually, the valley's farmlands use more Colorado River water than all of Arizona and Nevada combined. In a statement, Henry Martinez, the general manager of Imperial Valley's irrigation district, said he was pleased that a deal had been struck based on what he said were voluntary and achievable conservation volumes. Looking ahead, though, water experts say in an age of climate change, much more has to be done to conserve more Colorado River water. Madi?
Thanks, Saul. That's my California Report colleague, Saul Gonzalez. California officials say they're much more optimistic that communities near Tulare Lake in the Central Valley will not experience widespread flooding from the melting snowpack. Brian Ferguson with the State Office of Emergency Services says improving weather conditions means widespread flooding is unlikely. About a month ago, computer models showed that communities like Corcoran, Alpaw, and Allensworth would likely see floods that threatened homes. The state has bolstered levees around Corcoran, and farmers have been diverting more water for irrigation. But officials do warn that conditions could change quickly, and that the region is not completely out of the woods. California's lawmakers have been scrambling to address the state's fentanyl overdose crisis. The synthetic opioid is 50 times stronger than heroin, and it's the cause of nearly 6,000 deaths in California in 2021, according to data from the California Department of Public Health. But the state legislature is split on the best approach to tackling this crisis: treatment or punishment. Here to talk about these two approaches is Anita Chabrier, a columnist for the Los Angeles Times. Hi, Anita.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Of course. You've written about two fentanyl crises that are playing out in California. One is the urban street catastrophe, and the other is the suburban nightmare. Can you explain the difference between the two?
I think that, you know, we hear about fentanyl and we've seen the campaigns where one pill kills, and we sort of think of it as this very deadly, you even see the stuff and you're in trouble kind of drug. But the reality is that it is the drug of choice on the streets. So people are actually buying fentanyl and buying the highest quality fentanyl they can find in order to inject it or smoke it. And so we have an entire population of folks who are addicted to fentanyl and know they're addicted to fentanyl, and that is the drug of choice. On the other side of that, you know, you hear about kids getting pills off Snapchat, and those folks don't necessarily, they're not seeking out fentanyl. It might come in the form of something they think is Adderall or Oxy or something like that. But in fact, most of those pills at this point are manufactured with fentanyl because it's cheaper and easier to do. So those are the two different populations that we have that are being affected by fentanyl.
And how is the state legislature dealing with these two populations?
There are two very different camps going right now. One is sort of led by the legislators who maybe have personal experience with prior drug wars, like the war on crack, or live in urban areas and really see what's happening at the street level with fentanyl. And the other side of it is legislators who are really aligned with the parents of these suburban kids who have very tragically died from being exposed to fentanyl pills when they didn't know they were getting it. And that group really is advocating for more arrests, more crackdowns, possibly even forced treatment for folks, and kind of an old school approach that we used during the crack epidemic that we learned does not work.
Yeah, you mentioned the punishment proposal, and we know it's a touchy subject. Many families who have lost teens to fentanyl overdose want that justice. What did the experts that you spoke to say?
I don't want to in any way not support those parents and their path of grieving. But what the experts tell us very, very clearly is that punishment does not work. And even sweeping fentanyl up off the streets without going after those big cartels, it just doesn't make a difference, because the reason we're in the fentanyl crisis is because smaller quantities go farther and it's easier to make. So you're looking at a drug that, if we seize a batch, they can make another batch the same day.
And there is a special session coming up with the state legislature to address the fentanyl crisis here in California. What can we expect from that?
This hearing is meant to try to just air all those views and see where there might be places of consensus and might be ways forward, and to just talk the whole thing through and see where we can get.
That was Los Angeles Times columnist Anita Chabrier. Thank you so much for your time, Anita.
Thank you.
And that's the California Report for Tuesday, May 23rd. We're a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Madi Bolaños. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
Support for the California Report comes from the California Healthcare Foundation. Listening to Black Californians, a new study on how the healthcare system undermines the pursuit of good health. On the web at chcf.org/LBCA. The Wesley Foundation, investing in California's underserved children and youth. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose philanthropy includes 11th Hour Racing, working to connect sustainability with sport to help restore ocean health, on the web at 11thhourracing.org.
Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. Some want it all. SFO wants zero. Zero landfill waste, net carbon, and net energy by 2030. Learn more about the triple zero goal at flysfo.com. Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
Do you love your local bookstore? Well, I have the perfect event for you. This Saturday, April 27th, is Independent Bookstore Day. It's a day to celebrate your favorite local bookstore. I'm Olivia Allen Price, host of the Bay Curious podcast here at KQED, and I'm popping in to let you know that we will be hosting an event at Green Apple Books in San Francisco for the occasion. Come out for an author Q&A about the Bay Curious book. We'll be playing some Bay Area-themed trivia. There will be prizes and so much more. And the best part, tickets are donation-based, and all proceeds go to the Prisoners Literature Project. Learn more at kqed.org/live. I hope to see you there.